honoring veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler, brought to you by this local station and its sponsors, and presented everywhere, on the air and online, by Provident Payments, one of the fastest-growing payment consultants in America. Connect today at providentpayments.com.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes on a weekend in which World War II Navy veteran Mike Kalustian celebrates birthday number 100. He happens to be one of the last survivors of the epic Battle of Leyte Gulf, the last time the world has seen a true battle line at sea. Mike spent most of that engagement passing ammunition.
And it was a big line, and we're loading. These things are heavy, and these guys on the 40 millimeters wanted those shells because, you know, if they can't fire. So the big line keeps going. Come on, you guys, push those, get those things up there. And they're heavy. They're loaded. There's four cases of four. That's 16 in a case that would have to, you have to load up to the after engine room. Mm-hmm. And you wanted to see what's going on because you hear the noise from the 40, pop, 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 you know. And you say, hey, they're going to hit us, you know.
And for those who aren't familiar, the 40 millimeter is an anti-aircraft gun.
Right, yeah.
So the job you're doing may make the difference with whether or not a kamikaze hits your ship.
Right, yeah.
So that's pretty important work.
Yeah. Our biggest danger was escorting the carrier. If there was a torpedo coming toward you, you were supposed to take that hit.
If you know that a submarine or torpedo bomber or whatever is targeting the carrier, the Enterprise, you guys are the sacrificial lamb that's supposed to turn your hull in front of it.
We were supposed to take the blow.
Yeah. In other words, you're expendable.
Right. Yeah.
Is that something where, again, I'm just asking because I wasn't there. Yeah. I don't know. That Leyte Gulf battle.
Yes.
When that's finally over, is that a big sense of relief or wow?
Yeah. Because we had done how many ships were lost? I think that was one of the biggest battles we had. And most of those people were gone, either sunk them or whatever, bombed them, whatever, in the planes. By the Navy chasing the enemy back to their country, shooting them down, you know, hearing all this noise and flare and stuff, you know, it scared you. You wonder, hey, what's going on here? There's so many ships. You look like there's ships all over the place, all kinds of stuff, transports, carriers, whatever.
And you said something there. You said, I heard you use the word scared. And I never want that to seem like a trite question. I know it's serious business, but were you scared? Were you concerned that you might not make it home?
Right, that time, yeah.
Is that something you thought about much, whether or not you'd survive?
Before, I didn't think about it, but now that war, with all these worst battles going on, it scared me. So, hey, I may not make it, you know. Mm. And I said, oh, gee, thinking about home and what's going to happen if I don't go back.
You mentioned Okinawa.
Yeah.
You guys had to come to the rescue of some Marines who were cut off, surrounded.
Right.
You did that. And I'm guessing you were probably there quite a while at Okinawa.
We were there. We bombed that island for a while before it landed. We would transplant from a couple islands away from us. And we would go there, load up, go back and battle Okinawa for I don't know how long before the early Marines landed. And to me, it was Easter Sunday that the Marines landed on Okinawa. Mm-hmm. We would go there and bomb. You know, how many bombs we bombed? Days and days we bombed. And still, when they went to land the Marines, they were under battle. They were hurt. There was all kinds of mines. I give credit to the Marines for a lot. You got to have guts to be in World War II or any war. You know.
Did you guys ever bring wounded Marines aboard your ship?
Yeah. We brought that hand group. I don't know how many guys were hung up. We came around and got them. The medical helped them cure whatever damage they had. After a while, we loaded them onto the new cruise.
Did you have a sense that things were getting close to the end, that Japanese may surrender soon?
No, I didn't think. No, I didn't think about, hey, it's still going to be over with. No. In 45 August, when the war was over with, that was a nice relief. And then they found out that you could get discharged by the number of points. Then we found out if you send all those people, like the engine room or the cooks, you could not get discharged. Because who would run that ship if there was nobody on board with intelligence to run their ship? So our points were off. Still, you couldn't go. You had to stay on board the ship. So I had to stay on the ship for another year, going back and forth to Japan and patrolling the Yellow Sea between Korea and China. We knew then in Korea that the Third Liberal, that's where the next war is going to be. We just knew that from the instinct. The enemy would come out and say, you can't go. You got to go get, you know, go in China. Don't go on our side. We don't want
you. You could see it already, yeah, right. 46. They would
chase you out. Yeah, they would chase you out.
What was the hardest thing to deal with? Because you were on that ship for, what, 2.5 years?
43, 44, 45, 46, 4 years. The hardest part was when the war was over with, I can't go because our chief machinist mate, engine room, you got to learn how to stay on board and drive that ship. You got to have a cook to cook the food, the laundry. You know, life goes on still, even though.
You had the points, but they needed you to run the ship.
Even the war was over. Okay, when I finally got discharged from the Pacific, we had to go through the Panama Canal, which was very interesting, how up and down. Took a while to get through there. Then we went all the way around to New Orleans and docked there in downtown, and we let the servant come and see our ship.
You're on the ship to New Orleans, and right. You actually bring it back to New Orleans.
Right. We were right downtown. We made a couple of days' liberty. Then from there, we went to Philadelphia, gave the ship to Matt Ball people, and we got our crews to come to Great Lakes on the train.
What was it like to see your family again?
Oh, it was nice. Very nice to see all the people and walk around the town. It's not a big town, it's a little town. Just walk around and see, oh, this is where I used to play the pool table, you know, where I first went in there when the war started. It was still there. Mm-hmm. But the pool tables were gone. It was just a magazine store now. But it was nice going up and down, go down the train. We had a train track that went right between the north side and south side, north side of town. So you could go to one theater on the train track side and one track on this side. You just walk around sightseeing, meeting people you knew, just enjoying, you know. They had a bubbler in front of a drugstore. You go and drink cold water. It was a nice little town.
Was it challenging for you to get back to civilian life after being around all those Navy guys for those years?
The most important thing was our conversation, our words. Our regulation was terrible. Oh, we couldn't speak English without swearing. Oh, it was really bad. My mother would slap my mouth every time. It was just one of those things I couldn't learn how not to say the bad words. But after a while, we got into the factory, and then we started, friends were getting married. Little by little, friends were finding a girlfriend, getting married. After a while, some guy came up to me. He was Armenian, married to a non-Armenian. Came to me and said, don't you know nice Armenian girl you could marry? I said, there's only one I like, you know. And my cousin calls her home in Racine. She was in South Milwaukee by her niece's house, you know, visiting. And so I called her, made an appointment with Elsie to see her in Racine. There was an affair going on there next week. Mm-hmm. She said, okay, I'll meet you there. And that was it. I met her. We fell in love more. I got married in 53, had 54 and 56. Then we came to California. Life goes on.
How'd you end up here in Visalia?
My brother was here. He married an Armenian girl. She had visited Milwaukee to some friends. Well, Harry got to see her. He liked her. And when she went back, he went back and met her. She married him. Then she says, come out here. It's warmer. Yeah, nice out here. And so we locked up our family and went to Visalia. That was it.
Well, I don't want to leave anything out that's important to you, but I know, you know, one thing a little more recently that you experienced, you and your son-in-law got to go with a bunch of other veterans and their guardians on an honor flight, Central Valley Honor Flight to Washington, D.C. to see the World War II Memorial others. What was that like for you?
That was very exciting. I first time ever been to Washington, but to be on the beautiful countries with all these people on board that ship that were like me, an ex-veteran of whatever, and to go to Washington, D.C. and see all these beautiful places, it was very, very rewarding. Now, Bill took good care of me.
I'm sure he did. To be at that World War II Memorial, it's a pretty big place.
Yeah.
You know, there's a pillar that says California, where you live now. There's one that says Wisconsin, where you grew up.
Yeah.
There's the fountain there. There's the Atlantic and the Pacific. And then there's 4,000 gold stars representing 406,000 Americans who didn't come home.
Right.
What did you think about when you were looking at that?
When I went there, my biggest thing that made me cry was when I saw the Korean morale with those Marines with their drained and draped. And when you're walking, you could look at a guy and he looked like he's looking at you. He's looking at, as you walk, he's looking at you, he's looking. Oh, it was, that's one of the murals, that was one of the worst ones. The Air Force, the Army, this was the worst of it. To me, it was the one that really touched my heart.
So at the Korean War Veterans Memorial, there's all, they call them the ghost soldiers
out there. Yeah.
And you're saying when you walked by, it seemed like the statue's eyes were following
you. Right. If you follow one guy, he'd follow you. It was one of those, to me, it was one of the worst murals that I saw that made bring tears to my eyes.
Yeah. When you say the worst, you mean the most haunting or stirring,
right,
emotional.
The most, yeah, they're all nice. They're all great. Yeah. But I'm telling you, the one that touched me the most was the Korean War.
And you had been off the coast of Korea at the end of World War II, but your brother fought in the Korean War.
Right, my brother fought the Korean War.
And, you know, and I bring up the gold stars at the World War II Memorial because a lot of the guys that I meet now know somebody. Maybe it was someone back home in South Milwaukee or someone you met in the Navy along the way. Did you know anyone who didn't make it home from the war, who's one of those 406,000 who died?
I had a few, yeah. One was Charbonnerian, B-E-D-A-A-N, Charlie. He died in the Philippines. We grew up together as a buddy. He was about the same size as me and everything else. We enjoyed things together. But he went into the Philippines, and he got killed there. And to see their name on the gold plaque, it makes you wonder what's going on. Where was he? What happened? Why did he go away? Mm. Why did the war come? You wonder how many guys. The worst is when I keep bringing about the Navy, the war, the swimming. You know, you're dumb. What do you join the Navy for?
Yeah. When you read about ships like the Indianapolis or others that were sunk and you would have been in the water.
Yeah, I would have been gone, you know, because I can't swim. And I was little, you know. Those guys were beating up people left and right to save the, you know. And guys were going off like, oh, I see an island or whatever. Off they would go into. It was sad.
Awful. And the sharks, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's why I say, you know, Mike, you were lucky, you know. Your ship could have been, we could have been picked for the Indianapolis because they're a little older than us. See, the Indianapolis is an older ship. So they were picked him.
They were picked because they were fast and they also happened to be at Mare Island at the right time.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I don't want to leave anything out that's important to you, but I do want to say thank you. Thank you for serving our country and thank you for telling us your story. Is there something that you'd say you're most proud of?
Well, I'm proud of joining the Navy and having God save me from disaster and come and be a wonderful, thankful American citizen. I fought in the war for my country. I love my country for now and now. I can see it now. People are honoring the World War II veterans. If you see a flag or a hat, honor, thank you, I'll buy your meal, or I'll do the, you know, they're all thankful. They're all thankful that you did your part, your share. We're proud of you. Thank you, buddy. I've had people from older people to younger kids buy me, thank you, and pay for my meal that I didn't know. When I really leave, it's been paid. So then when you say, hey, they're proud that they still live in this country.
That's what Mike Kalustyan shared with us when he was 96. Those words have only been underscored since. And now he's 100 years old, so I have just a few more questions for him. Do you have any advice for anybody listening who would like to make it to 100 like you?
Well, I would think the most important thing would be to put their life into Jesus. That's the only way. He's been, to me, great many storms. I could have drowned a long time ago, but life saved me, and that's one of the wonderful life of being alive to see my grandkids, my grandson growing. I'm wonderful. Thank you.
And you're wearing your hat from the USS New Orleans.
Yeah.
And that makes me wonder, is there a moment that stands out from your time aboard ship where you didn't think you were going to wake up the next day, let alone make it to 100?
Most of the time in the battle, we were kind of safe. We're a little bit further away from the ships, you know. But with battles in Guam, Saipan, Okinawa, Tinian, we hoped that we could secrete the battle because we had nothing to worry about. We were too young, and we didn't think if we were going to die or not. We just went and did our job, and that was it.
You know, another thing that comes to mind, just because we're in the Christmas season here, yeah. Right? Do you remember any Christmases aboard ship?
We had a place where the guys had musical instruments, and we would play Christmas songs. And during the lull of a battle, whatever, we would have Christmas. These guys all had instruments. Somehow they brought them on board ship. Anyway, and they would all have music, and we'd go in the mid-deck of the ship where the airplanes are, and we would have Christmas songs. But no candy, no cake, no nothing.
Well, I'm just thinking about that and imagining. So you go from one moment, the sound of all those big guns going off nonstop, to the next moment, you're in there singing Christmas carols together?
Yeah. Aurora's was my first Christmas came 2 years later in 1942. I didn't get no passage or anything until the 1944. And when I got them, I had Christmas presents from Wisconsin, but the cake and all that stuff was old and gone, and nothing to save to give to anybody. It was nothing was there to give. We just sang happy birthday and Merry Christmas, and we enjoyed it before the battles were going to come on.
So you're opening this package from home in Wisconsin, yeah, thinking there's going to be some great stuff in there, and it was all crumbled or moldy or nothing?
Right. We had the newspaper from our hometown 2 years ago. I had to put them in order to read them to make sure who's what. And I told the kids in the mail that the Christmas present came late. Thank you. Wait for me until I get home, because the cakes, there were no cakes but crumbled. Packages were broken and torn apart.
Do you remember any of the songs that you might have sung aboard ship? The Christmas carols that you guys sang?
Jingle Bell and Bethlehem. They're all Christmas songs, all crying. Everybody was in a happy mood that they were had a lull where we could go and sing. And if it was during a battle, you know, if we missed a meal, there was no time to eat any meal because of the battle. But then after the lull, they would get a cold sandwich, bologna sandwich, and maybe coffee. But that's about it. There was nothing else you could get.
Well, we know his Christmas meal this year is going to be a little more luxurious than that. And the perspective from those Christmases aboard ship will help him appreciate it even more. Once again, happy 100th birthday to Mike Kaloustian. You can find his smiling face at hometownheroesradio.com, where the podcast version of this episode also includes a brief comment about Mike from his son-in-law. Thanks for listening to Hometown Heroes today. I'm Paul Leffler, hoping you'll join us again next time when we're reminded again through the stories of our veterans that freedom is not free.
To let Paul know about a veteran in your life, visit hometownheroesradio.com and click on Suggest a Veteran. Today's program has been brought to you by Provident Payments. Give your business the edge only their personalized service can deliver at providentpayments.com.